phela mina ngiyinsizwa mina. Ngiyinsizwa.
Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things
and the bad things.
Let's talk about it. Yo, it's another episode of the Shady Podcast. My name is PH and I'm back, baby.
What's happening, Warriors? Hiatus. What's happening?
I missed you, man.
No, don't lie. You didn't
even
phone me.
What do you mean?
You went to Durban July, forgot your bra.
Yeah, these things happen, man. Sorry.
Friends like you.
I was there for one day, boss.
Yeah, it's fine. I could have also come for one day.
I was in and out like a quickie.
Even me, I could have come here, but I was in and out like a quickie.
Listen. The reason why I sang that song is because we are going to be debunking a whole lot of things, and we're talking about sex education, pleasuring, myths, blue balls, Kama Sutra.
Kama Sutra.
Toys, all of the works, lack of, not having sex, celibacy, abstaining. We're going to be talking about all of those things, and we've got experts in the building. We've got experts, and by experts, we're not playing around here. These are doctors and professors, so please, hello, good people. How are you?
Hello.
To yes. My left is Dr.
Mpume
Zenda. And Professor John T. Searle. Yes. How are you guys?
So good.
Yes.
How does one become a professor?
That
of
is
sex?
My first question. Do you have to have a lot of sex
player,
to be a player?
Yes. Lots of experience.
So, Prof, you were
so I'm a sexist of in your pleasure. Day. I'm not an academic professor.
Okay. Well, you're a sexist.
Somebody's
going
to get upset.
Professor of pleasure. Yo, no, sure. That's a hell of a name.
That's a title, eh?
Yeah.
And
so serious.
So, hey, all the ladies, if we were to call them, they'd be like, hey, John T's the one.
John T's the one.
Hey, you rocked my world. How are you guys? First and foremost, how are you guys? And thank you for your time for being here. How are you guys? You guys good?
Such a pleasure. Yes. I'm good. It's cold.
Sorry.
You know, it's winter.
Yeah.
You guys like. But.
So we're in peak sex season, is that what you're saying?
If you have a warm body and
a talking blanket,
or else the one battery operated, that does well too, you know. But I'm
well, we decided to time your visit around this past weekend because it was Durban July. It's a big sex weekend. Yeah, tell us about it.
It was a big sex weekend. I was there Saturday. I flew in on Saturday and I flew out first thing.
But you
Sunday
can do
morning.
A lot in a day.
Quickie. No, but I timed it that I didn't even sleep in Durban. So arrived, played, time to leave at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, straight to the airport, gone. No time for quickie. So not even in the car. I mean, there was a car, but there was no time for.
What do you say? Durban July is a,
you know,
is
because
a sex weekend.
You've obviously never,
I've never
been.
So
look. Besides the horse racing that goes on, and
a lot of horsing
goes
around.
A lot of horsing around. I saw an interesting video PH posted. That one of that chick walking across the road.
Oh yes, ish. We can't play that video, but I arrived in Durban, in Umhlanga, I see a girl carrying her shoes.
Yeah,
she's wearing socks. She has an ice trapez. In a thing, and she looks like last night.
Yeah, okay. She was still in a club outfit.
Yeah, she was still in a club outfit, and I was like, "This girl is living her life." It was very funny to me, but it also speaks of, I mean, because she was walking out of a hotel.
Yeah,
so which definitely means that she didn't sleep at home. She didn't sleep with.
They didn't Uber her home.
They didn't Uber home.
No, she was walking to the taxi ring.
Yeah. No, she was. Yeah, she was
on her way to catch a taxi.
Come on, guys.
So she's putting up the ice tropez. Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, sex was definitely had here.
But they didn't Uber her home.
There's a boyfriend that was also probably calling her, and when they were calling her, they were probably waking up for another round. Well, that's a story for another day.
Jeez, like. It's rough.
But yeah, Durban
but
July.
But a lot of assumptions there.
No, it happens.
No,
let me tell you something. On such weekends, you hear many stories of people being brought in for the weekend. In fact, there were lots of jokes flying around saying your girlfriend is being discussed in a WhatsApp group.
Right now.
Their links are being sent as, no, bring this one, bring that one. All because for a good time. Mm. And guys will bring them in. They'll give them all that they want.
And I think it speaks to, like, you see, like how you said you're the professor of pleasure, Dr. Professor John T. And Mpume, you a doctor of sex,
yeah.
Right? Is that you guys are on one end of, let's call it, the sex spectrum.
Sure.
And where the game is, yeah. Right? Yeah. The sexual market right now,
sure.
Is this trade of commodities.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And I feel like we have a generation of people coming into the sex game.
Right.
And I think they don't realize where the value in sex is. Does that make sense?
There's no question.
Yeah. Yeah. What is sex actually? What is the point? Is it not to reproduce? No, well, yeah. Not nowadays. So where have we moved away from? What are people missing out on when it comes to sex? Because they think it's this exchange, this transactional exchange.
Yeah, so we've moved it into an exchange and into a transaction. And we've moved it out of pleasure and out of intimacy.
Mm.
And out of the deeper parts of sex. But there's also another part of the world that's moving much more into the deeper pleasure of sex.
Mm.
That's tired of the surface and that's tired of the plastic and the hype and all the bullshit that wants something more real.
I see. Where are they?
Prof, what is that?
Prof said something very interesting. Sure. Before we started, you said something. I don't know if we
No, we can't.
You said, I am tired of...
He said he's tired of women and he wants to come out of the closet.
Fuck off. Fuck off.
But don't knock it till you've tried it.
Hey, let me tell you something. Ain't nothing going up my ass. No. No.
But that's not all that there is.
So I'm joking.
So no. Back to that.
Yeah. Yes.
That's exactly what's happened. What I think Professor is also alluding to is that is there this need to feel like I need to sow my oats, do whatever I want to do when it comes to sex, and then at some point, I'm tired of this. Can I settle down?
Sure.
Can I find that deeper meaning? So it's also an evolution of your own growth, your own self-awareness. Mm. Things that you used to enjoy when you were 20, when you were 30, you look back 100%. And you're like, you know what? What is the meaning of this?
Mm.
So there's also this progression of growth, I believe, that allows that transition. The sad part is that when you look at this generation or the current generation, in those teens, 20s, 30s, people are doing a whole lot of things that sometimes I wonder, when you look back in your 40s, what would you think about that? Have you spent so much of that budget?
You've spent the whole vagina.
That you've got nothing.
Yeah,
it's fair, man.
The pee-pee is finished. You see? Is it still possible to make real connections when you're coming from this multitude of connections? In other words, if you're coming from a transactional background, is there really any hope? Well, I don't want to say hope, but like, what are the chances that PH, for example, not you particularly, my friend, but let's take PH, for example, he's coming from this background of hoeing throughout his 20s. He gets to his 30s, late 30s, and now he actually wants to find a wife.
Yeah.
Is there going to be any joy or any pleasure, you know, that experience, that deeper connection?
So, you know, a lot of it's about education, and it's the kind of education that we get.
Mm.
So most sex education that people get either comes from porn.
Mm.
They get a little bit of biology, a little bit about periods, a little bit about wet dreams, a little bit about how not to get pregnant or get somebody else pregnant, a little bit about STIs. And then we get the media, which gives us all sorts of bullshit. So we get education that's fantasy, because porn is fantasy and movies are fantasy. And 98% of what's on YouTube is fantasy bullshit. So we don't get real education.
100%.
And that's important. So we don't get, like, we get biology, but we don't get permission for pleasure.
Sure.
And we don't understand the connection between, like, genitals and the heart.
Sure.
So, like, your heart and your cock as a man, listen carefully, PH.
Yeah.
Listen carefully.
Because you've only got one of those.
That's right. Your heart and your cock are one system.
Sure. Yeah.
So we need to get the idea of connection.
Mm.
And we need to get to know how to talk about everything.
Mm.
So we don't get that education.
Like, for example, what do you mean that education?
Like, what is sex really?
Yes.
And why are you really having sex? And what are you actually looking for?
Besides procreation.
Yeah. So, yeah. So why? Are you having sex because it's like an ego thing?
Mm. Because.
Are you having sex because you really want pleasure? Mm. Are you having sex because you really want to give a woman pleasure? Are you having sex because you really want to connect? Mm. Or are you having sex because you think you should be having sex?
Or are you having sex because you want to up the tally?
Yeah. Oh, wow. And so why? And if you think about what am I actually really doing, then we start to say, well, then where's that coming from inside of me?
Prof, isn't it fair to say that all these things that you've mentioned now, I think a lot of guys experience them in different phases where firstly, maybe you're led by ego, then you're led by the drive to pleasure woman because when you were dealing with your ego, something else happened and then, you know, you progress to the different stages as opposed to it happens in one in one phase of your life. Is it not fair to say over time that you experience all of those things that you've mentioned?
You're absolutely right, but there's a big but in it.
Sorry.
PH, listen carefully. And it's not about sticking things up about.
Sure.
We know where your mind goes. Now get it out the gutter. Sure. Here's the but.
Yeah.
The but is, and it's a little bit of a thing with men, but it's an invitation.
Mm.
So instead of saying that it's a dig at men, it's an invitation. A lot of men don't grow up sexually.
Mm.
So they're looking for kind of the same thing. But when we grow up a little bit as men, sexually and emotionally, then it starts to change.
What is growing up, if you don't mind me asking? There's a question I want to throw to you, but if you could answer the growing up part, what does that mean?
So what is it that you really actually want and what are you looking for? So is it just the ego?
Sure.
Is it just the little squirt in the dark orgasm? Sure. Is it a little bit more than that?
Sure.
Is it that there's a little bit more emotion? Have I thought about what I'm doing? Or am I living like a 50-year-old man's life, but I'm still having sex like a 15-year-old?
Okay. With randoms.
Yeah.
Because with that being said, and before I go to you, Doc, I would like to believe that thinking, or in terms of growing up, does that lead to why men then want to have multiple partners when it comes to sex?
That's the ego one.
Is that... Because I'd love to believe a lot of men are driven by ego before anything else.
Yeah. And if that's all that it is, then how much is ever going to be, how much is ever going to be enough?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Doc, I want to ask you, and with what he said about men growing up, it feels like nowadays that the woman, there's a saying like in urban culture where the women are the niggas now, where the women are the guys. Like they're the ones taking charge. They're the ones... you know, with the multiple bodies or rotate, it's called a rotation. They're the ones.
It's called a revolving door.
Like, rotation, they're the ones, like the roles have swapped where offline we were talking about how I'm like not trying to have sex. And, you know, here's women like, yo, where you at? What, you know, like, what's happening? What's going on? How have we found ourselves here?
Look, when
have we not grown up? Have women grown up or...
No, a conversation I had with a really close friend of mine who's a therapist and he's a male, he said something very interesting. He said, when we're growing up in our culture, because sex does not live in a vacuum, it is very much influenced by everything around us, our sociocultural norms.
Sure.
He said, when we are young, and a lot of people can attest to this, girls are instructed and boys are kind of left to be like, just make sure you're home by 6 o'clock or by 7 o'clock.
Yes.
Right? At home, my mother will wake me up in the morning, like, get up, do your bed, da 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 da. And guys, for the most part, I'm not saying it's a generic thing. So and we often think that as women, for the longest time, we thought that, you know, guys have it easy and we are sort of like in this oppressive kind of space.
Sure.
But the thing that happens is when you are a child and you are instructed, there's something happens in you that kind of says, oh, okay, so I go to school, after school, get a job, after a job, maybe you can think about marriage or whatever. Mm. When guys are not instructed and when I say instructed, it sounds very in the box, but more like guided.
Okay. They're almost encouraged.
They're almost encouraged. Yeah. When you kind of, you know, say, oh, I, at 16, I... I had sex with that girl, your dad or your uncle's is more likely to say, like, oh, my boy, you're dead. Whereas with us, as soon as you get your period, we are told, close your legs, don't play with boys and stuff. And I think it has to do with, again, the kind of sex education that's out there, including the sexual norms. Now, things have changed a lot. The media, what you see in the media today versus what you saw 10, 20 years ago, things have changed a lot. Sure. And there's also been the kind of movements, whether it's the feminist movements, whether it's, okay, I'm educated, I've got my money, I've got my own apartment kind of thing. Speak up, advocate for yourself.
Sure.
Those are all the things that have changed in our culture that have allowed women to be a bit more vocal about what they want. And I think it's not good or bad. I think it's a very big spectrum, because a 20-year-old who is hitting up a guy and saying, if you pay me 2,000 rand, I will be there in a blink is very different to a 41-year-old who says, my guy, I like you. And I would like to get laid tonight.
Hey, shout out to all the single moms.
Right? But the consequences are very different.
Call me.
You know, so it comes back to that moral fiber of our community, personal moral fiber.
Sure.
The kind of goals and purposes that we are kind of aspiring to be. But I can tell you for free from just my pink couches in my office, it's wild.
Yeah.
Let's get into, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say, but just to speak to both of your points, is that like, it seems like the way that it's set up at the moment is leading people to make a lot of mistakes and make the wrong decisions.
But who's setting it up? We are the ones.
Like the
what's the information that's being consumed?
The information that we consume. So the way media tells us sex should be viewed, the way that porn tells us sex should be viewed. So all of
the way that they say women must be free or
women must be free.
But who is giving the information? And that's another thing. There's a lot of misinformation, myths, and whatever.
Let's get into those.
My question is, where are you going? Because you still have an autonomy in terms of, you know what? I heard what Wara said. I don't agree. I heard what PH says.
Sure.
Okay, that's a bit more aligned with who I am.
You're going to get the pressure from your friends and stuff. You know, like, because we're all consuming the same information.
Okay, at the core of it.
I hear all of this. Yeah. Because we're now speaking about information, right? Prof was talking about extreme levels of pleasure or taking it beyond, you know. And we get a lot of that on social media as well. It's just like, oh no, okay, it's not the things that I'm consuming.
you just heard about it.
I just heard about it.
Your buddy told you about it.
I just heard about it. But the things that I've stumbled on, there's some wild takes out there. And I'm just like, yo, should this be free information or should it be experienced, you know, with a partner who's had the experience where now you must stick a butt plug up your ass for 8 hours before doing this, that? Yeah, I'm just like, this sounds...
Look, I don't know where you consume
extreme.
This.
Where
is this?
8 hours with a butt plug is a very long time.
Hey,
I have to tell you.
I know nothing about
like
that shit.
An hour is fabulous. 8 hours, you have pH, is a very long time.
And there's nothing wrong with butt plugs, by the way. You know exactly what to do with them. So it comes back to the thing, whether you're talking butt plugs or spanking or whatever, there is credible information on how to do
where.
So you have to go looking. And you have to look at the source.
Here's the credible information first.
But if you look at our society, because there is so much information about everything. So probably what's the percentage of news that we get that's real and that's fake news?
I'd say
70-30.
Yeah, I was going to say 80-20.
So if you look at the world of sex education and you look at what's on YouTube and you look at what's on... a lot of that's probably the same in a way. So when something comes along, it's not necessarily to believe the first thing that you see or you watch or that you hear. And then learn that you cannot really learn about sex from porn.
Absolutely not.
Damn.
Because
you guys, come on.
You can't, because porn is illusion.
Well,
so like,
so I'm not gonna smash off.
Yes.
I'm not gonna smash the lady next door.
So I'm sorry to destroy all your illusions. Now you got nothing to wank to anymore.
Oh my word! You guys actually believe in porn?
Listen, I'm not gonna smash. Obviously, you don't know us.
But no, no, no.
I'm
just like, you believe in porn?
So I mean, this guy's trying to live out the stuff that he says.
Okay, so listen, I've spent years at the top of the food chain, loser.
So here's what you see in porn. Here's an anal sex scene in porn, right?
Sure.
Anal sex scene is...
They go straight in.
There you go.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. And people think that's how it happens.
No fucking ways.
There we go.
So in jail?
And by the way, the girl is like...
She has done enemas. She's had anal massage. She's done prep. Yes. She is lubed. And otherwise,
it will fuck up the whole scene.
Here we go. Because they'll be messy, too.
They'll be messy. Yeah, yeah.
And by the way, they do multiple takes to get it right.
And from all these different angles. Like, we got all these cameras here. Yeah. Except they got a camera like right there and move your leg out the way. And it's like.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
When practically applied, the shit doesn't work.
There we go.
So.
And if you watch how many takes. Does it take Bruce Willis to blow up a building? Yeah. And, you know? So when you want, you have to learn to talk, and you have to learn to talk in detail.
This is for all the girls that just want to stick fingers up guys' asses. There's prep that goes into this.
PH, don't knock it till you've tried.
Let me tell you, the only knocking that happens is a knee joke. Like, what the fuck are you doing? No.
One of the biggest
things. It's an exit point for me, so not an entry point.
One of the biggest bits of education that we need to learn is how do we talk? How do we talk? And how do we talk in detail?
Before, during, and after. Men are reluctant to talk.
Let me tell you why. Right? If you think of, like you say, you know, when you're coming up in the sexual game, you're a teenager, you start getting these feelings, having wet dreams. So at school, your peers, you're going to explore, you're going to watch some porn. I have a 15, 16-year-old son. So I know what boys go through. I was also a boy once, right?
Then
I went on to be a serious operator. And now I'm retired. Now I'm looking for that connection.
Sure.
And what I think happens is that you want to show off for your friends. Even this is men in their 20s and 30s do the same thing. Yeah. They're not going to say, you know, I really need to find out where the G-spot is. Like, I'm going to actually put the time and the effort into understanding how am I to provide pleasure. Yeah. No one is going to have that conversation. Oh, but they're going to be like, hey, my man, that's on when I took her back. Her legs are shaking. And then if you speak to the hun is probably going to be like,
he's lying.
Like, I mean, it's all these tall tales.
But also,
you don't want to admit that I actually don't know what the fuck I'm doing.
Yes.
But if you don't at some point get that education, I don't think you're actually going to satisfy anyone except your ego.
Sure.
That's all. There was a thing on TikTok a while ago that somebody showed me.
Mm.
So in my world, we call a pussy a yoni. Y-O-N-I. Yoni means sacred space, sacred place.
Pussy a yoni.
Yeah.
Yoni steaming.
So
yeah.
I'm sure you've heard
so they showed guys, and it was somewhere in England, and they showed guys pictures of a yoni, and they said, can you find the clit?
Mm.
So what was the percentage of men that could find a clit?
Well, who were the men?
Losers.
Random men.
Yeah,
not you.
Not
you.
Not operators.
Not you.
Yeah. Sure. I found it a while ago.
So maybe about, maybe 5-6% could.
Yep. Jeez.
And the rest pretended
and
like that.
Even the ones who found it, you'll find that when you ask the ladies, there was a problem with the amount of pressure they were using, you know, how it feels, how long they went on for. Women who actually experience pleasure from the
clitoral stimulation.
So, look at you. So, women who
you just watched the YouTube videos.
You know, it's not inside; it's on top. Clitoral stimulation is the pinnacle of female pleasure.
That's why you got to double down, Boris. You got to.
What do you mean? Tell us.
I'll take issue with that.
Female pleasure.
Female rights.
No, I'll take issue with that.
Okay.
Could be something else.
I think it's the tip of the iceberg.
What's this? Clitoral stimulation.
Yeah.
From what I've seen. Yeah. Isn't it a common name? Well, I mean, women vary, right, in terms of being pleasured.
Right.
Some prefer clitoral stimulation and others prefer penetration, correct? Or...
So when you look at from a perspective of research,
yes,
80% of women will have a enjoyable, pleasurable
experience
and climax on both clitoral and penetrative sex. What is slightly different is this idea that penetrative sex alone, gives us pleasure.
Misconception.
Yeah. For the most part, there has to be clitoral stimulation. And even then, I find that when we think about things like erogenous zones, everybody kind of goes straight to the genitals. And
what's
like,
an erogenous zone?
So... could be hot spots.
Man, expert.
You know.
I'm just saying.
Right. You might have those areas that are more sensitive. They're different, you know, with different people. But I think your whole body, depending on who you are with and the kind of connection, could literally be an erogenous zone. Mm. Yeah.
But how do you figure that out? Because now, you know, I feel like a lot of what we're saying takes some exploring. And this is for committed couples in a relationship.
Yeah, not pH quickies.
No quickies. It would be difficult. You know, like, if I go to the Durban in July and I find a hun and then I take her to the hotel, it's unlikely that I'm going to say, listen, what are you into? What do you like?
No, it's but why not? Because why it's going to change your experience.
Doc,
so
I'm there for it.
So
hold on. I don't have time.
It doesn't matter.
I'm trying to hit and skedaddle.
So all that you want to do is get inside.
What time was your flight back? Flight's at 6. There's no time.
So all that you want to do is have like a little bit of friction sex.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say the shame on you.
Because
there's so much more.
So much.
And if you just ask one question. Listen, if you take a woman out to a bar.
Yeah.
Sure.
You're going to ask her what she wants to drink. Yes.
Yes.
And if you go somewhere to eat, you're going to ask what she wants to eat. Yes.
Sure. Yeah.
Sure.
So why not?
So why are you not going to ask, what do you like, really quickly?
Here's a problem. Here's a problem. A lot of women actually don't know some of their...
Yeah. Sure.
Some of them are going to answer you with what they think you like.
Hold on. From... fair.
What they do, bro.
Because also, let's use lack of time on the example that Waris said. We've just got space for a quickie. Person A... who's in this situation? Let's say this person A and person B, and obviously there's the subject.
Let's call it person H.
Where it's like, cool, I will ask, hey, take me to your spot. What do you like? Okay, cool, because I want to walk out of there with my track record. You know, like where you walk out saying, yo, that guy knows what he's doing, right? But I'd rather ask you than try figure it out versus the next guy who's driven by ego is just like, yo, I've got a big dick and I'm just trying to, you know.
Yeah. Because even if it's a quickie, what's going to be your best position for a quickie?
Some women don't even know.
It's a tough question to ask. Sorry, yeah. You know why? When you ask the woman, she's going to assume you don't know what you're doing. And some of these baddies out here, you're going to be like, what do you like? They're going to be like, don't you know what to do?
Can you see how many variables there
disconnects.
Are?
You see?
Yeah,
you know, that's why it's just in your best interest to hit.
But you said something very, very interesting when you brought up the issue about your son. And it brings also, you know, when we speak about education.
Yes, I'm trying to educate him.
Actually,
I tell him, flick the bean.
It's not, you know, I write lots. And I wrote a piece saying that
I love you, my son.
Clitoral stimulation is not a death metal experience.
Exactly.
That's,
I mean, that's
not as
don't be a DJ.
Loud,
don't
like,
be a DJ. Black coffee that, there.
That's why I'm.
It's like a whole.
I'm good,
It's like a whole symphony.
Sure.
And it's got soft and slow and gentle and crescendos and drums and all sorts of things.
It's real music.
That's it. So it's not just one thing.
Yeah.
I want to go to something about the pinnacle of pleasure.
Okay.
And I'm not arguing.
But before you go there,
please finish that.
I've got a 15-year-old daughter, and when I look at what's happening out there, it freaks me out to think there will be a time where I have zero control in terms of what is happening or what the choices that she makes.
Yes.
But one of the things that I think parents, household, as communities, First of all, because we don't talk about sex, we make it such a shameful thing. Parents struggle to have conversations. And I want to say age appropriate. From as early as, I mean, my daughter started asking me things when she was like 4 about, Mom, why is it okay for us to bath together, but I can't bath with Dad, right? Kids will give you clues in terms of what is age appropriate, but we make everything such a, you know, we use a lot of euphemism. It's not a vagina. It's not a clitoris. It's a flower. It's a petunia.
Yes.
So giving language to your child, giving permission to have the conversation that is age appropriate. You don't even have to go to the graphics. They probably figure that out or find that out at some point, but you have to give them permission to get to allow them to be confident in themselves about how they find information, about who are the credible people to ask. And most importantly, when they are in trouble, their friends are most likely not the best people to go to.
Yes.
You want to create a space where they come to you. And so it doesn't, the reason why a lot of these things, we're experiencing all these things, oh, I don't know how to ask a girl if I want a quickie. I don't know how to ask her, or the girl doesn't know how to say, oh, that's painful. I'd rather turn to the side. And it's because from the get-go, we haven't been given permission, or also just have the language. A lot of our vernacular languages, when we speak about sex, it sounds very...
It sounds rough.
Oh, okay. Let's say the pinnacle of pleasure.
Pinnacle of pleasure.
Right.
Yes.
By the way, let me not make an assumption. Go for it.
Go for it.
No, I want to hear it first. Say it. What? Say it.
No, no, no. You say it. You know, let me put it this way. There are things, as much as I have done sexology from both the male and the female perspective, one of the things that I can never, ever know for sure is what it is really to be like to have a penis. And so I can take all the science that I have, all the experience, personal experiences that I've had, but the reality of it, you know, have I ever had blue balls? No.
I want to ask about.
Well, what I will tell you, Doc, is it's fucking fantastic. My favorite organ, hands down. Yes, Prof.
Yeah. So when we think about sex and we just talk about clits, that's fabulous. And it is, because that's where it starts for so many women. And that's where most women have orgasms through clitoral stimulation. So learning to stimulate a clit is so important and vital. But then you get into things like G-spot orgasms and P-spot orgasms and cervical orgasms and expanded orgasms. So that's where we start to expand into pleasure far beyond what we generally know. And this is where, like what we see in porn and the movies, becomes so bad, because it just shows us something that's so limited. And that's what, like when you say, you know, like what's an erogenous zone, your whole body is an amazing sex organ. With the in the right circumstances. And this is where we need education, like often far beyond just the basics.
Okay. But wait, when you say pinnacle of pleasure, right?
Yeah.
Because I want to take it.
Yeah.
If we have to grade, let's use porn as an example. You can porn or in your personal life, right? Yeah. If we have to grade orgasms, one could argue that in porn, you get the ordinary orgasm, which is like, such seems like the fake one, where they're like, oh, wow, I'm coming, great.
Gang
and then
size.
You get all the way to the other side where this person is squirting the whole room.
Squirting.
Right? I believe the squirting scenes are selectively edited. You know what I mean? I don't believe the person gets there.
A lot
in
of
the
what
time
you see in
this,
porn is not real squirting. Not.
But this is what I'm saying, right? But in life, I've seen some real squirting.
Yes, poison!
I've been full disclosure.
She's got the
I've been around for a while.
I'm curious about what you mean squirting.
First time, it was squirty. Let me tell you, the first time I saw it, I actually got a fright. I was like, what the fuck is happening? Yeah. This person is peeing on me. Yeah. You know what I mean? Turns out, but because it was an older woman, she was like, I was very young at the time. She was like, no, this is what's happening. Because when I actually reach that pinnacle of pleasure, you'll know about it, because the whole fucking bed is going to be
waterfall.
Right?
No. Waterfall estate.
Now what happens is another woman can look at that.
Yeah.
Okay. Or the guy experiencing, if you experience it at the age of 20, you're thinking, fucking hell, this is great. I can get others to that point by simply doing the same things. You will fail to get anybody else to that point for years.
Because women vary.
So here's the
Because women vary, yes, but it's like, let's say you're applying all of the same study. You're like, I'm going to apply the clitoral stimulation. I'm going to apply the penetrative sex. I'm going to hit every erogenous zone I can. Mm. And still this person is not getting to that point. Is it perhaps not possible for everyone?
I'm going to give you a few simple answers. The first thing is every woman is different and every woman is different every day.
Yes.
Okay.
Sure.
So bodies are not machines. Clits are not machines. Yonis are not machines. G-spots are not machines. Hearts are not machines. So everything is different every day. And if you expect the same thing to work for everybody, that's delusional because it's not going to happen. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing.
Well, ego bruised.
There you go.
Sure, okay. Sure.
So change up my style.
We're just focusing on, I learned this technique, and this is the same for everybody. It's delusional.
Sure. Yeah.
Full stop.
But it is what people do try to do.
So full stop, that's delusional. Okay. The next thing is no orgasm, even if it's like a cervical orgasm that lasts over 2 or 3 hours, is not better than a clitoral orgasm that lasts 30 seconds. Mm. They're just different. That's all. They're not better.
2 to 3 hours.
They're just different.
Expand on that one, Doc. Tell me more about that one.
So they're just different.
What do you do for the cervical one? Oh. Take drugs?
So that's like a whole... other
days
story.
Work.
But you know, sorry, Prof. Mm. One of the things that you speak about is we kind of sit on the extreme spectrum of
pleasure.
Not even pleasure, of understanding because of we've studied this.
You've studied it, yes.
But also, what happens
for the ordinary person?
What happens is to try and bring all this information to one person. If you just like, I just want a quick. It's like, okay, it's going
to
be
difficult. Try and bring this information to one sexual experience.
Exactly.
You can't.
You cannot. The question I often ask people is, first and foremost, what do you enjoy? Before, because now we can go into the technicalities of, oh, how do you get this one? How do you get that one? Because we think it's different. But the reality of it is sexual experience or sexual pleasure, ultimately, whether you're having a squirt, whether you're squirting or not, whether it's a cervical or it boils down to the most important thing is figuring yourself out, being able to communicate that to your partner, being able to, during the actual act, being able to vocalize and say, oh, that's nice. That's a green, you know. and for the most part, a lot of people get stuck on just being able to communicate that. Mm. You spoke about women not being able, not knowing their own bodies. Mm. Some women have never even taken a mirror and looked at just the anatomy from a biological perspective.
Sure.
The first time they hear, oh my gosh, your vagina is so amazing, is from a guy. Mm. And these are all the layers we have to peel in how we are educating our society when it comes to sexual pleasure. Mm. It cannot be just something that is pinned on, oh, it was a wet bedding squirting. And sure. That's another thing.
Hey, guys, don't listen here. That, okay.
Yeah.
Full disclosure. When I was very young, I used to work at a retail store. And there was this auntie that used to come to the retail store, but she was super hot, right? And needless to say, she was an auntie. She probably had needs. And at the time, being a very young boy.
Young, dumb, full of cum.
Young, dumb, full of cum. This lady was on some very instructive in the way that she instructed.
She helped make you the man you are.
She
lived a fantasy through.
I came there, I was like, let me jump inside. Bang, bang, finished.
Thank you, ma'am.
Then she was like, no.
That
was terrible. What you're going to need to do, and you can apply. No, I thank her every day. You're going to need to apply what I teach you here, literally. You know what I mean? Obviously not in those words. But through experiencing multiple times, that's the other thing, is that you've got to have a lot of the sex in order to learn. You can't have sex once and, like you say, take on all this information. Then perhaps whatever we've advised today doesn't work. Now you think, oh, fuck, I'm useless. It's that you're going to have a lot of sex in order to get to the point where you've got a lot of education. I don't think a lot of people have that opportunity.
Well,
you see, that's the thing.
So what I wanted to add before you come in there, Prof, was and this is what we're speaking about today. We're dealing with the hookup culture where no one has the opportunity to have multiple opportunities,
multiple sex, even with the same
with
person.
The same person. Yeah. It's today it's this person, next week it's the other. On the weekend it's, you know, so you never get to get the groove, or you can, as a woman, you won't get the satisfaction that you may be looking for because you're dealing with different styles, different sizes, different everything. And as a guy, you also don't think, if you're on the other side, don't get to pleasure the woman because this one knows her body, this one doesn't, this one, you know, deals with the
erogenous. And think about this, right? The body count argument is that if you're a man, okay, I thought it was interesting that you said you've got a 15-year-old daughter, because I can tell you, everything that I tell my son, I would never, I would tell the opposite to my daughter. You know, where I'm saying to him, well, what's the story? Take her to the movies, flick the bean type of thing. I'd never say that to my daughter. Do you know what I mean? I can joke with my son in a way where I would never joke like that with my daughter. So I feel like women bear that burden where it's like, if I want to practice, I've got to limit the amount of people I practice with.
Sure.
Because if you start saying as a woman, 20-something years old, like, hey, fuck, I need to figure this shit out and I want to have this pleasure, I want to experience the pinnacle of pleasure, you are going to be viewed by society as a whore bag. And if you're a guy and you're like, I'm trying to figure out how do I operate, you know what I mean? Let me apply what I learned from the auntie. I can apply it with 100 women.
But why does it have to be a boss? 100 women?
I'm making an example, not 100.
Okay, I mean, I'm saying is it the practicing, and because now it's as if we are saying to practice a number of times has to be with a number of different people.
Well, a number of, if it's with a, call it a number of different people or the same person.
Is it possible to practice and figure out all those things with just one person? Maybe two people.
Maybe, but remember what Prof said earlier, is that that one person might be different. Because to speak to the auntie, listen, the auntie was a freak. Like, she wanted a lot of extravagant
things. Shout out to all the single moms.
I'm yet to meet someone, you know what I mean, that's at that level. I've maybe out of 100, 5. Because most women just want, you know, most women are gentle and feminine and they don't want rough stuff and strange things. You know what I mean? I think what we've seen recently, to draw attention to something in the public domain, is with this Diddy and Cassie case. Where Cassie, at some point, right, you know, what a lot of the witnesses are saying, let's take the abuse part out of it. I mean, just in general, like when Diddy was planning his freak-offs. In the freak-offs, they were doing stuff that to the general public is like, what the fuck is wrong with these people? Whereas when this was actually happening, in the time that it was happening and the freak-offs were happening and it was all consenting adults, they were trying stuff that we as ordinary people have never heard of. But I imagine they were enjoying themselves because the freak-offs were happening every week.
And that's what I want to ask, because you kind of alluded to that, Prof, where there are levels of, you know, I don't want to call it extreme pleasure, but there's the surface level where it's just like penetrative sex, missionary, doggy style, Bob's your uncle, that's it. And then the levels of which were being described in the Diddy parties of the freak-offs where there's baby oil, there's this, that, the other, there's other people coming in. Where's the line in terms of what is maybe a pleasure, an extreme pleasure, and freak-off level of...
So firstly, is there a line? And maybe that's just for everybody to work out what it is for themselves.
No, seriously.
Why are we grading
people? That auntie... Yeah. Sorry, I'm making the auntie. Yeah. But if it had been public information at the time, let's say my mom found out. You understand?
She would have gone to jail.
She would have had a heart attack.
Sure.
Okay? And if anybody, I think, in the auntie's social circle knew what the auntie was doing, they would have canceled the auntie. Yeah, you know what I mean? But because it was just me and the auntie that knew what was happening, because that's the thing, it's a private thing.
That's part of the problem is that we've made sex this private thing. You know, it's this little box. We take it out in very specific circumstances. We use it and then we put it away again.
Yes. And we don't speak openly about it.
And we've
created
this incredibly fucked up and repressive culture, particularly in terms of female sexuality, where the truth is that female sexuality is way wilder and way bigger than
Hey, dude.
Yes.
Yeah, I got strangled by a female once.
Well, listen carefully now.
Yes, I'm listening.
And what we've done is we've said that when a woman does go and explore and experience lots, she is labeled as a slut and a whore.
Yeah.
And when a man does does that, then I'm a stud and I'm a hero and everything else.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So we need to be able to talk about it so much more in a way that we talk about everything else.
I think because as soon as people say that sluts and whore thing, then women basically say, oh, well,
that's it. And if you look at it, we learn and we practice about stuff in life.
Mm. With anything.
Okay, yes. Mm. So I remember doing my first podcast on Cliff Central, and I walked into the studio not knowing a thing and learnt a whole lot. And as we learn, we get better.
Yeah.
Okay. You guys do whatever you do in life. You do whatever you do in life. As we learn, we get better. So we keep on learning. We get new phones. We learn how to use them. We get new programs. We learn how to use
and
them.
And new vaginas are no different.
But we don't learn because we think that we know what we know.
Yeah.
And that's,
and we think that's all there is.
All that there is, and that's all. It's the part of life that we learn about the least, but we spend the most time thinking about and talking about and watching and doing or trying to do.
I'm happy with my this maybe is a preference where I'm happy with my current ignorance of I'm not trying to stick anything up there to find out how good it is. I think current orgasms are great. If you're telling me anything beyond this, I might as well just start taking dick or crack and experience a great pleasure. Where you're telling me that for me to get to another level of orgasms or pleasure, I need to.
But you need why?
No.
Why?
Hey, yo,
What, it's okay. And here's the other thing. It's okay for you to be like, you know what? I'm happy. I'm satisfied with just being here.
I'm not trying to be at all fours.
But also we cannot then be policing and boxing people who say, you know what? I'd like to have chicken.
Bring your knees up to your chest.
He's lying, man. He posts videos in the gym when he's doing his stretching and he's like, you know the position. No, you know what I'm saying?
And here's the thing. The biggest reason why we also struggle to talk about it is because there is an idea of wanting to belong, even in conversation. Mm. You said something interesting about as a 15-year-old, you know, I tell my peers, oh, I did this. We lie about what we, you know, those things
because we want to be
perceived a particular way. Yeah. But imagine if all of us were told, you know what, whatever your sexual taste buds are, whatever you are comfortable to experience, and also remember what you are experiencing in your 20s, in your 50s, PH, you might be like, actually, might just try going in that. We are constantly evolving. There's not ever a time where you are not growing and learning. And so what you enjoyed in your 20s might not be what you enjoy in your 50s. So let's not put these very demarcated.
Every single moms are dangerous.
Never say never.
Single moms are dangerous.
But you know what a part of it is? A part of saying that I'm comfortable where I am, and there is nothing wrong with that. There's never a judgment on it.
Sure.
Is if we want to expand, it actually is going to take a little bit of effort and energy.
Got you.
And part of that is, do I actually want to put the effort and the energy in? Because we live in a culture where the divorce rate is higher than
the marriage.
Okay, and that says an enormous amount. Not that every relationship should stay together, but for a whole lot of other things. And that creates an enormous amount of stuff in the world that is chaotic.
Sure.
Okay. We live in a culture where the levels of sexual abuse are higher than they've ever been. Okay.
And
so when we start looking at this, we need to say we also live in a culture where sexual problems, with all the openness, supposed openness that we have, are higher than they've ever been.
Yeah. Mm. Sure. Despite the fact that
that's right, more men are struggling with erections and premature ejaculation than ever before.
Mm.
More women are struggling to have orgasms than ever before. More people are experiencing sexual pain and all of these things than ever before.
What is it? The food?
So if that's the case, we have to put in a little bit more effort and energy. So to say everything's fine and I'm happy where I am, that's absolutely fabulous. But it also often means, are we giving our partners the fullness, because if there are so many divorces and if all of this stuff is happening, is it because we're actually not really giving each other what we want to find that level of fulfillment?
We're still hiding.
That's it.
I want to ask Prof with what you've just said now about comfortability.
And we're not talking about you particularly.
Yeah. But
you're in there.
I want to ask the psyche behind certain things, right? Where it's like some guys in conversations will be like, as long as the woman comes, I'm good with my level of satisfaction, right? What why is that some case where some guys are just happy with the bare minimum pleasure that they get, right? But being driven to please a woman, is there a psyche behind that, or is it just?
There's a lot, and it's a huge growing field.
Yeah. Mm. Maybe I don't know if I'm understanding. Also, are you asking if my woman comes, I'm good. I don't want anything after that. But you also get somebody who will say, once my woman comes, then I am comfortable to then ask for whatever I would like from that.
Well, on both ends.
I think there's a big thing, you know, whether we're thinking from a consensual perspective, but also from a respect and asking what is the purpose of us doing or having sex? Sure. If it's for pleasure, can we both enjoy the pleasure? Mm-hmm. One of the things I've often said to ladies is your orgasm, your sexual pleasure does not depend on your partner. Stop making the guy or your partner, whether they are heterosexual or not, so responsible for your pleasure. Gotcha. There is something that you take responsibility for as a woman, getting to understand your body, when you go to the table, a buffet table, and you're like, oh, he didn't give me an orgasm. I'm like, so what were you doing whilst he was eating?
Sure.
You know, and those are some of the layers, again, that we have to peel off. Mm. So it doesn't matter in terms of where you want to start and stop. Is there consent? Is there respect between the two of you? And most importantly, genuinely, ladies, we're not faking orgasms in 2025. Mm. Are you really?
Okay.
Jeez. Thanks, crowd.
Are you both honest about being satisfied? In fact, one of the biggest things when it comes to sexual divorces and relationships breaking up is that people assume things are going well, and yet there is dissatisfaction, sexual dissatisfaction.
But I want to come into to one of the points where I feel like a lot of women don't know their abilities sexually. One, and it's what you've just said now, where they depend on a guy, right, to please them sexually. It was like, beyond maybe using a vibrator here and there or not knowing your erogenous points, it's like, okay, cool, if I'm dealing with the same, you know, penis the entire time.
Social construct.
Yeah. And it's the permission to pleasure. For women to claim that permission to pleasure. Sure.
But in that evolution that you mentioned earlier, you know, in your 20s, you're not going to do what you do in your 30s, you're not going to do what you do in your 40s. In my experience, you will not find a vibrator in a 20 to 25 year old.
Single moms! Woo!
But in 35 plus. Yeah. 35 plus.
Six different vibrators, bosses.
Yeah. Listen, younger girls, they don't even fuck with it. Is it easier maybe for women when they're younger? Because, you know, like, I think men, the argument is that men are more virile when they're younger. Are women also perhaps more prone to pleasure when they're younger than when they're older, or does it not change?
It's actually quite interesting you would ask that, because there is almost like this irony when it comes to women, and I'm talking purely from a biological perspective. Mm. In our 20s, we reach what we call peak fertility in terms of our hormones. Mm. Yes, sexual intimacy and pleasure has a whole lot more to do with your hormones, but particularly there is a driver, you know, in terms of our hormones. But the converse is true when it comes to when we generally get more comfortable. And when I say comfortable, you can have a lot of sex with a lot of men in your 20s because you are hot, you are sexy, your body is like that. But you find that when you really go into the depths of did you actually enjoy that? Mm. It's like, I just gave Waras, you know, a time of his life.
It was Waras, you know what I mean?
In your 40s, you're sitting there thinking, first of all, your hormones have gone down. So things like low libido are more likely. But also, you are sitting there thinking, I know exactly what I want.
Yes.
I'm not trying to get PH Waras and to try and try their stuff.
Sure.
And so, partly that, we come into our own the older we get as women, which makes us more selective in terms of what we want.
Mm.
If I am a single mom, or if I am single, I'd rather be with my vibrator than waste my time with PH, who I know it's going to be 2 minutes and it's done, and I still have to be nice to him, you know, type of thing.
And you still have to talk to this idiot the whole day.
Like, you know.
I want to. Okay, it's great that you've mentioned that, because the lifestyle around age, I think, matters nowadays.
Yeah.
Where you'll find that ladies in their 40s, like late 30s to 40s, are taking care of themselves. They're going to the gym more often. Well, you find with the lower ages, it's Mukhodu Monday, it's champagne, it's a mixture of contraceptives.
Yes.
Their diet is horrible. They don't take care of themselves. So I would like to believe that all those things kind of contribute to what we've spoken about in terms of lack of healthy healthy sexual life. Do those things contribute or not?
They do, but
I would like to believe that you don't.
It's a little bit like if you look at your bedroom when you were a teenager and stuff, and you walk in there, you know, I don't know how many teenagers are super clean and neat and stuff.
Sure.
It's the process of coming into your own is not just sexually. Mm. It's about discovering, I like brands as opposed to, I like neutral colors as opposed to that. Mm. I like my space in this manner. When you're younger, you are hardly concerned about those things.
Gotcha.
But it's also not to say anything is wrong with that. That's part of what I always say, time is the grand equalizer. Assuming you are doing the right things in terms of learning, of growing, of becoming. Mm. When you are a mom or a dad, there are ways that you deal with partners that you're not even thinking about before you are, if you are a parent, for example, single parent, doesn't matter if you're a mom or not, even if you're a dad, you want to be like, okay, if my child is here, there is absolutely no way that I'm bringing somebody into the house.
Sure.
Also, if I am going to bring somebody to my house and my child is not here, there is a way that I'd like to present the space that I'm in and so forth.
Do you know how nice it is sneaking into the...
Lock the kids' room.
Maybe in your 20s, you're thinking, I want it now. There's a little corner behind.
Sure.
It's just part of growing up. And we need to be okay with allowing people to say, grow up at your pace. Just make sure you're doing the right things.
Mm.
Eating.
I just think there's a lack of... education.
Hygiene. Education is a big one.
Which leads to obviously even things like hygiene.
So it needs to be that sex is in the context of life.
Yeah.
And the thing is that we've made it so separate. That's the problem.
The secret box somewhere. Yeah.
Sure. Instead of, there's a beautiful saying somewhere that talking about sex needs to be as normal as talking about buying groceries.
Yeah.
And what we're doing on the weekend.
Mm.
And that's...
Lube should be part of groceries.
Prof, you mentioned some problems earlier, right? Like we're experiencing the highest rates of divorces. I'm speaking now to men specifically, right? In the culture, there's a massive... If you watch any podcast, a lot of the discussion centers around how it was easier before for men to find a wife, find a girlfriend, even just find a hookup, as it is now, for men now. Right, for women it's easy because obviously women make the choice. They say yes, women hold the power of consent. With this new generation thing that we're speaking about, there's this thing that women want money, status, all of these things that men work hard to get in order to be attractive. What happens to those ones that don't have any of that stuff? They now develop, let's call it blue balls, if they're not having sex. What is that doing to the development of people like that who are not getting laid? They're not getting laid because they're broke. They fucking got a shit job. I don't know. They and maybe they're not particularly visually appealing either. What happens to those men?
Firstly, they're mixing with the wrong people.
Okay.
Because if you're only mixing with somebody who's going to give you sex because of what you have, then that's going to be very, very limited.
Yeah, but where are you going to find someone who's going to give you a chance to? Yeah.
Yeah. And again, it's like a bigger, it's a much bigger picture of the society we've created that's so much about based on what you have on the status, which is really the shallow stuff, and it's the surface stuff instead of actually who are you as a person.
Yes.
So we're judged for what we have, not for who we are.
Yes.
We're judged for what we can do, not for who we are. And if you spend time with somebody and you have a conversation with them, then maybe you're actually going to find that they're a really cool person, or maybe that they're a really interesting person.
They don't have a problem giving you sex.
That's charity work. I can tell you, the hands that are listening are like, yeah, I've got no time for that shit. I found this very interesting clip I want to play for Getty. Just Wandy, play that clip.
I'm currently single.
Oh, shit. It's my birthday.
It's your birthday? How old? How many years?
25.
25? That's a good year.
Well, how old are you?
Yeah. I'm 21 years old.
Do I have a chance to get your number?
Forever. I don't know. That age gap might be a little too deep for me.
You're too ugly to be asking this shit, dude. I'm sorry.
Yeah. You don't have ass.
I think his first problem was that pink.
Now that bruh, he's got the purest intentions. Yeah. He's out here trying to do his interviews, get some girls' numbers, but you saw him. And the reaction by the girls in the clip, I think, speaks volume of how men in this society and in the way the game is structured right now, these are the things that they're struggling with. Girls look at you and they're like, what car do you drive? Who are you? What status? Mm. Now it's a barrier to entry. Into the vagina. You're not going to get laid.
Which vagina?
Because
you're looking at such
Durban July weekend.
You are looking at such a typical...
Wait, Durban July weekend. I would like to argue that Durban July weekend, me, I've gone in previous years and I'm not ashamed. At Durban July weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you should be hooking up with something. Right? PH has hooked up with stuff too. Hey. Like, you know. What happens on Durban July weekend is, here's a big event on the social calendar. So the numbers are up. There's more people there, which means there's more opportunity for you to find someone to maybe hook up with the Durban July and continue something after. But the only ones that are coming right there are the ones with the cars, the money, the status.
Because everybody who's there is bought into the same shit.
Exactly.
Yeah, but where am I supposed to go?
Let me ask you this question.
I have to go with other people.
How many people are there on the planet?
If you said you are at the Durban July.
But I'm making an example. Wherever you are, in a social gathering.
Let's use that example. You are at the Durban July. I promise you. If you stepped out of the Durban July, I don't know how far the venue is, and you just walked to a nearby Spur or whatever, would you find a girl that is more likely interested in you? And this is something...
Not at Spur, dog.
But she's going to, because there's lots of single mothers at Spur.
But you see...
The issue is also...
Who are you looking to be hooking up with?
Yes, I think there's even between us and you guys, right? When I say us and you guys, myself and Waris, and on you guys as the guests, we come from a world, the foundation of that world or our industry, the foundation of it, it's either transactional, right? Mm-hmm. Either transactional or not consistent enough. Compared to a world where there's opportunity for meeting someone, conversation, multiple dates, genuine conversations, then the opportunity for sex, right?
No.
We, unfortunately, are around or we find ourselves in a position of accessibility, and that accessibility varies from...
We've been fortunate.
Fortunate and unfortunate.
Yeah.
Fortunate and unfortunate. True, yes. And I say
privilege has responsibility.
The reason why I say unfortunate, where you're looking for something genuine, you're going to be bottled into, you're a DJ. You do 1, 2, 3, and you.
No one's gonna take you seriously.
Yeah.
But if you're outside of a DJing scene and you just go to the office park,
it's my job.
They know us. Even here at the office park,
They're like, you know, no. So I'm just highlighting a challenge.
Just a little bit inside. Just a little
bit. I'm just highlighting a challenge here where I'm just like I'm trying to be on this side where it's like you want to find. You know, something genuine where it's not based off the foundation of the things that we struggle with, where it's usually transactional, where it's like if I meet a single mom.
That's why he's going for single moms, because he's moving out of the DJ space.
Sure. Absolutely.
And he's trying to find like Jewish MILFs who have no idea that he's PH.
Yeah. It's like, hey, who are you? I'm actually a finance guy.
Yeah, I'm in finance. You know, so for me, it's just, I think I wanted to highlight those things that... The points of commentary here are coming from different worlds.
Of course they are. Also, a part of it is where do you go? Like, if you're going to certain places, that's what you're going to find.
Sure.
True.
That's all. Mm. And if you're looking for something else, you have to go to different places. Because if you're always going to the same places, then you're going to find the same thing.
Yeah. We're the swingers. I mean, yeah.
No.
So if you want to go to a swingers club, you're going to find swingers.
You can't be shocked when you're like, I was trying to find something genuine. Sure. And it's like, mwah.
Well, but you might, but
Speaking of swingers, are swingers using the excuse of sexual exploration to just freak off?
No.
In other words, you know what I mean?
So there's such a level of swingers, and there's a world of swingers. And I work with a lot of people in that world. Mm. And at some point, I actually ran a club.
Hey! Oh, bro! Come inside.
What's the number?
Must be MILFs there.
With that being said, is that a level of... Because I want to get into... And I want to throw in the race card here, right? Where I don't think... that kind of fluidity is common in a black space versus where swingers are more often than not white couples. Am I wrong, or does it come with age thing, or maybe it's not spoken about?
No,
what I've seen is that you find more of certain communities being swingers.
It's white people. I don't know. I know one or two colored families.
Yeah,
that swing.
You know, because
I've never actually met black swingers.
And it's a conversation that we touched on earlier on sex education, where in black families, we don't speak about sex at an early stage, you know, where, and if I look at experience between being with an Indian white girl or Indian black, white, or, you know,
Chinese.
It's just like, hey, that one was more fluid or free with their...
sexuality,
as opposed to in Tabi Singh was
social construct, cultural construct. You know? But they're there.
There are enormous amount of black swingers.
Across,
really?
There are. It's more. It's not as. What's the word? It's not quite as open, for want of a better word.
Taboo.
But it certainly is there.
It's definitely there.
What happens at swingers thingies?
And people swing.
He's doing an investigation.
I mean, you spoke about taking it to the next level. So tell me, prof.
So some people go to clubs because they want to watch. Some people because they want
to... So Diddy wasn't wrong.
No, but that's the thing. I'm glad you said that, right?
Some because they want to watch. Some because they want to be watched. Mm. Some because they want to participate. But participate means lots of different things. Because it's not a free-for-all. You have to. It's not like you walk in and there's wall-to-wall bodies and sex everywhere. It's not like that at all. Mm. And some people go because it's an exciting environment and they never do anything at a club, or they only do something with their own partner. And there's public rooms and there's private rooms and there's all sorts of things.
And it's a popular thing. Like it's, in terms of if I had to open a swingers club tomorrow, when you had your club, it was busy.
You need somebody with a bit of taste. So as long as you've got a good partner, then you're going to be fine.
Sure.
No. I don't think I'll go there.
Everything has
everyone's
its
gonna,
has
everyone's
going to
try and chow me, mum. The dads are going to be upset.
Everything has its own tribe. It will attract the people
that are into it.
That are comfortable with it. I was very when I learned as part of our course, just around BDSM, for example. You know, for what you see being portrayed on TV and even when you talk about it, and I'm going to that race card amongst our black culture, you know, you'll find guys be like, ah, no, or what is that? And one of the beauty about going to or finding proper information about things, I was very impressed about how much consent, how much thoroughness happens. Now, I'm not talking about people who are just winging it and, you know, fake it until you make it. When you look at people who actually teach things like BDSM properly, the way that they go through the step-by-step of, you know, what you have to discuss, a lot of things. You have to discuss with the partner what is consensual and what is okay for them, what is not. You have to, I mean, as things as finicky, well, not finicky, as detailed as what kind of object can you use for spanking? What
sounds
what
like too much admin.
How much the kind of roping that you use at it? The afterwards effect, or the after, you know, you have to sort of like a debrief between you and your partner. And I thought to myself, it would be so cool if these principles could be applied everywhere. Because so many people, whether you're having sex for the first time, so many women, so many guys sometimes feel like they were taken advantage of the first time they had sex. So many women feel like that. But because we don't have the languaging, again, the language and the proper education, so many things fall into the cracks. And I think sometimes this fear that is put around, or the taboo-ness about around sex, it makes it even more difficult for people to ask the questions they want to ask and get the right information they need.
Here's the thing. You hit the nail on the head where you said it's too much admin.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, but that's what we've been talking about. So you think about this. How long does it take a woman's body to really get aroused?
Mm-hmm.
How long?
Mm-hmm.
Any idea? To get...
Depends on the woman.
If you send an e-wallet,
no,
it's a different
story. No, we're going to be talking in general terms.
If you send a bank notification, we're rocking.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so you're talking a minimum of 30 to 40 minutes.
Yep.
And then to get to like higher states of arousal, you're talking another minimum 40 minutes.
Sure.
Minimums,
sure.
Okay?
Sure.
Jeez. And if you want this 10-minute little... And 10 minutes is a lot for some people.
Yep. 10 minutes is a lot for some people.
Okay.
But
that's not for me. But 40 minutes of just...
That's before we go.
Before we even...
There we go.
Yeah. Is it too much?
So,
no, it's not that it's too much. It's just that, like, I would say you'd need to be in a committed relationship.
Depends on the circumstances.
It's circumstances,
what do you mean?
Yeah.
But okay.
You know, most of the time, you know...
So is it
easier
to send an e-wallet because
no,
then
like,
she's not gonna?
It depends on your history. You know, like again,
okay.
Like,
if
yeah.
I'm coming,
I want to
because this is the ultimate transaction.
No, I'm saying if I'm coming to you to your house and we've got limited time, your child's asleep.
You can't come when the child's there.
Ah, it's fun. Gets the blood boiling.
Oh my word.
I've got what, about 2 hours?
Okay.
With you, right? I'm pretty sure what, spending about, after the conversation, getting into the deed, spending a healthy 10, 15 minutes on, your eyes has opened up. 10, 15 minutes on
foreplay
before getting into it. And also, that's why I was saying it depends on the circumstance, because there will be
days
where.
Yeah, if I'm ovulating, I might want.
Me the whole night. Yeah. So that's what I was saying. I think for me it all varies in terms of the circumstances, where there'll be days where 10 minutes is long and 10 minutes is, and then there'll be days where 10 minutes is extremely short, you know, where you want to devour me between midnight and 5 a.m. I'm at work before, you know, the kids go to wake up. So all of these, for me, all of these things matter.
I think the bigger thing for what we're saying is, sometimes I say sexual intimacy is a bit like food. Sometimes you want to grab a snack and, you know, walk out. The question is, am I invested in this person?
Sure.
And when I say invested, I'm not talking about is it a committed relationship, but am I invested in showing up as myself and being real about what I want? And am I invested in honoring what they have showed up here to do and to be? So if we agree, dude, I've got 1 hour before I have to go back to surgery, and you're like, that's not going to work for me.
Sure.
Can I respect that and be like, it's all good. See you after work.
Mm. Or do I call someone else?
But when we start using things like send an e-wallet, it's like you're overriding that person's ability to truly say...
Yeah, that doesn't apply to older women. I'll tell you that shit for free. Like that,
what,
that
the is e-wallet thing.
The transactional conversation that we were highlighting.
No, it's the younger ones.
The younger generation. Yeah. And now
but even
it's
for
like,
them...
Yeah, but they don't know that yet. They think they want the e-wallet. Mm. So they take the e-wallet. Then you chow.
But you know. But
you know, you just want to operate and roll.
So all that we do with that is we just end up
propagating. We are perpetuating the very culture.
Perpetuating the system.
That's why over time it takes time.
And that's where it's
I'm not
so
trying to change
wait,
the
good work.
But it's not just on its own. It needs to be in the context.
Sure.
And again, that's where like conversations like this are so important, that we can say what we need to say really openly.
Mm.
And make that space available to younger people.
I was going to say, who has more, I don't want to say fun. Is it married, committed people or single people?
I would like to.
People who are open, regardless of whether they're married, whether they are.
No, because in the marriage committed thing, these conversations are going to be a lot easier.
No.
Okay, maybe from the different worlds, I'll comment where you or I will yearn for something consistent. By consistent, I mean with a partner where we're able to do this exploration that we're talking about versus the Durban July conversation where it's just like you've got one opportunity.
The numbers game.
It's a numbers game. Oh. There's limited time. There's a million considerations.
Bet.
You could not even come right with this transactional stuff where you're flying her in, you do all of these things, and then Warwick arrives.
Don't you say it? I mean, divorce rates are at the highest.
Yeah, clearly they're not
even
fun.
And one of the things that isn't... So it's got nothing to do with whether...
With whether people are married or whether they're not. I work with people, you know, in my practice, and sometimes between married people, these are much harder conversations than with single people. And the other way around. So it's people who are willing to learn about themselves, to explore and to explore each other. That's where the possibilities lie, regardless of the relationship.
So then a normal couple who's watching this, what direction do they take if their sex life is, you know, like stagnant or flat?
Start talking and then start learning.
And if you're struggling with those two,
there's
nothing wrong with going and seeing someone
and
who is a professional.
That's where come to see us, just as a start and as a thing.
Sure.
So we think part of it, I sat with a guy a little while ago who after 25 years, his marriage was ending. And he sat there in tears and he said, he is supposed to know how to be a husband.
Mm.
Mm.
How is he supposed to know?
Nobody has.
So there's a whole mixing desk. It looks like a mixing desk over there.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So that's your world.
Yes.
I don't know a thing about that.
Sure.
Okay.
Mm.
You started, somebody showed you or you learned.
Mm. Then you practiced.
Yeah. That's it. So where do we get these skills? Because we go into marriages and into relationships not knowing a thing about how to be a good lover.
Sure.
And not only the physical, sexual side, but how to communicate, how to talk.
Yeah.
What is it to be a man? What is it to be a woman? What is it that we want? So how are we expected to do this? Because you're talking to your son. You're talking to your daughter. My daughter's 35 years old.
Mm.
She's in the most amazing relationship because of all the stuff that she learned and has put into practice.
Okay.
So we need to be able to have the conversations and to say we need to be able to ask for help with this.
Mm.
And for most of us, that's the hardest part of life, especially for men, to ask for help with sex, with relationship. Because we think we're supposed to know.
Oh, yeah. And we're scared to ask because then what are people going to say?
Yeah, instead of, if you really want to be a man, this is how you really be a man. This is how you show up as a man.
Gotcha.
To be the best man that I can be is I can't do it all alone.
Stop watching porn.
You're doomed.
Stop watching porn.
I'll cheat you, PH.
I'm trying to play those swingers parties.
PH, you've got a lot of options.
Lots of swingers at the church.
At the church, right?
And yeah, I've always said, I'm like, hey, this couple, you know? Anyways, guys, first and foremost, I mean, yeah, sorry. Thank you for your time. I think this has been very informative. I think this conversation could go on forever. Maybe a part two should be organized. But my takings from all of this is obviously education, you know, sex education is the most important thing and the key to a healthier sexual life. I think we should be more open in terms of talking about sex and the intricacies of sex.
Yes. And guys, I think for the guys, something I learned, like, don't be afraid to ask, like you said, you know, what do you like? Yeah. What do you like? What do you want? In my experience, I honestly, I haven't had a bad experience asking. I was just
playing
devil's advocate, like to say. No. In terms of when I asked, nobody said to me, what the fuck? Don't you know what you're doing? You know, that's never happened. But if you ask or at least open up that channel of communication, you'll be doing yourself a massive favor and saving yourself a lot of trouble. And you'll be making your partner very happy.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Where can we find, if I am having a, if I'm having a flat sexual life?
Men's clinic, brother. Premature ejaculation happens
fuck
soon.
Off. Yeah. Where can we find you guys? Where can we find you guys?
Right. So I am based at Morningside Medical Clinic.
Oh, shit. We're around the corner.
Corner of Rivonia and Hill Road. Or you just go to our socials at dr.gyne. Drop us a DM. Somebody will get a hold of you and make sure that.
Dr.gyne.
Yes.
All right. Yes. Ladies. Make sure. Yeah.
And prof.
And gents. And couples.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My website is eroslife.co.za.
E-R-O-S.
E-R-S.
We'll put the
E-R-O-S-L-I-F-E. .co.za. Facebook, John T. Searle. On Instagram, John T. Searle.
Cool.
Is the Swingers Club still open?
You just to, damn. No, we can open a new one.
Do you know of anyone that could...
In the basement.
Okay.
In
Do you know of anyone that could take in two homeless...
You know, they have these vetting processes, and as soon as you guys apply, it's going to be just...
No. Damn. I got to take a young black stud.
PH.
Guys, thank you very much. This has been fun. This is super exciting. I've learned a lot, but I've also realized that I'm on the right path. The woman in their 40s, single moms. Nakia.
Oh, well, it's a... I don't know, my friend. It's an unsustainable party. I have to find a wife at some point.
Of course, yeah. If my crush is watching, please. This is not my real life. The things I talk about on the show, it's not me. I'm a loving partner. Please take me in. Well, outside of things of sex.
Outside of things of a sexual nature.
Sex and swingers. Some things are really happening in this country. Brother, when all of this stuff was happening, I was just like, I cannot wait to unpack with what I was like, because it's got to do with a lot with your world, or at least an understanding.
I know nothing about that world.
No, not your world, but like, there was mention of security companies and this, that, the other. But there's a lot happening, and these are serious allegations.
I think what is interesting to me about the Mkhwanazi statement is that it was almost like a culmination of cases that have been happening over the past 3 to 5 years, all being connected.
Sure.
So something happens in Joburg, there's an assassination. Yes,
Pele Lemoyne.
Yeah, over the... Tembisa Hospital
lady
ties back to an individual who had a vested interest in what oversight was happening at Tembisa Hospital. The guns that were found when they did the raid on Mamkize's house
100%.
Are guns belonging to a security company also owned by said individual.
Sure.
But not just there. It then extends to Northwest. And I'm like, how the hell are all of these cases connected?
Sure.
You know, up until I saw the press conference and read the articles afterwards, remember that assassination?
That video. Let's. I think for context sake.
Let's play the video.
Yeah.
What I know, what I like about KwaZulu-Natal, especially in South Africa at large, that we've got very dedicated people out there from the law enforcement as well as private sector, especially the security companies that we are running the streets with them on daily basis, who understand that there's a rot in this organization, who understand these problems that you're talking about, and they're not going to sit back and allow this thing to continue. So I'm inviting all of them. I'm inviting the citizens to stand up and protect these men and women who are standing for the truth in this organization. They must protect them. Whether I'm there or not there, fight must go on. We must protect this country against crime. It's all what we can do. So whatever happens to me, happens. I'll take it, whatever happens, happens. If it's prison, it will be prison. It's already on communication planned by Mohotsi, the DNC, and the chief of staff that they must deal with my matters. Whatever matters comes, they will come. But what we must not surrender is this country and our children to be controlled by drug syndicates. And that's what is currently happening.
Lots to unpack, right? Like, lots to unpack in that. I was even now looking for something that I saw on X, on Twitter, just kind of breaking down all these things that were said and all these connections to the alleged person who lives nine lives.
The cat.
You know? The connections and to all the people. But like how, through that briefing, that Nick Umkhwanazi just like laid it out, man.
Bro, and you know, laid the thing is out, like, yeah. When I initially saw the clip, I didn't watch the whole clip, right? Sure. I retweeted it and I said, you know, I really like Umkhwanazi, like since before this. And I was like, hey, I'd really love to work with this timer. Because in security, we work with a lot of SAPS, obviously. Mm. Like, everybody works together in fighting crime, if you will.
Sure.
But yeah, Nanje, like, he's just got that thing where I'm like, I like this timer. The last time I felt like this about a timer that I've never met in person was Umkilicha.
Yeah.
Umtitieli wa Mabuto.
Yes.
And he gives me the same energy.
Yes.
There's that very famous clip from when he started, you know, like when he started sort of like showing up on the socials.
Sure.
Where he's negotiating with the taxi owners.
Sure.
And he's telling them that, listen, you guys blocking the road, the shit's not going to fly. Right? The police are here to maintain law and order. And then he's like, you know, like, if you want to fight, let's fight type of thing.
Sure, sure.
And they're like, no, we don't want to. You know, like, they immediately, there's this respect that he comes with, but it's also like this firmness.
Yes.
And then I went back and I watched the whole clip and I was like actually listening to what he was saying. And that thing was like a tell-all book testimony vibe where he's like, actually, you don't even know about the stuff that I know about.
Sure.
And I think what led to it is he must have got a call before then. Where I imagine the way these calls happen is that I call you and I say, XAPH, there's a guy that's going to come and see you. He's busy with this matter.
Sure.
I need you to keep quiet about it.
Sure.
And because I'm your boss or I'm your peer or I'm somebody senior or I'm a politician, 9 times out of 10, the person receiving the call just listens and goes with the flow because that's the status quo.
Sure.
And I think Umkhwanazi, being a Zulu timer, the type that I think he is, he must have been like,
no way.
You're going to come to me, forget about it. Mm. And it came through.
And you're going
to
implicate me, whatever it is that you want to do.
No, just on some, dog. Like, I'm not keen. I'm not down. You know what I mean? Sure. Sort of like, yo, dog, look the other way. A million is going to come your way. Sure. And he's like, nah. I'm not going to do that. In fact, I heard about 1, 2, 3, 4. I'm going to do something about it. Then the threats start. And umuntu nenkani, you know what I mean? Someone that's just like, oh, you think I'm scared?
Sure.
I'll show you. Press conference, now.
Now.
Flanked by your special forces guys. And then I just go and I put out all the files. He named names. Mm. He dropped files. And I think it caught them by surprise because that's not the way that these things usually unfold.
Yeah. They didn't expect that turnout.
And when we find out about it as the public, it's usually during the State Capture Commission.
100%.
Where it's like, no wonder this guy was behaving like that.
Yes, he was captured.
He was captured.
Sure.
This one was like, no, let me stop you right there. First of all, you can't capture me. Second of all, if that's what you want, I'm a police officer. So I can go now because you called me personally. I can go talk about it.
Sure.
Mageti, there was WhatsApp saying, I've spoken to the commissioner, Ganjan. I was like, damn!
There's this thing. It's quite lengthy, but I'll read it out. Yeah? This, I'm not going to read out the person's. In fact, it's _ Tembegile T.
Yeah.
But I'll make sure we put these screen. These
handles, man.
No, the screenshots. She's basically saying, let me get this straight. Mamkize was being investigated in the SARS inquiry led by a senior attorney Koreth Nodia. In the height of this, they attempted to murder Koreth.
Yeah.
She survives. Mamkize's home is raided for tax evasion allegations and they recover firearms. That belong to Kat, right? Yeah. The VIPs, sorry, his VIP protection company. It was about 40 plus firearms.
Guns, yeah.
This is the same individual whose wife ordered a hit on Tebogo Tebojane.
Dog. I didn't even know that. I found that shit out yesterday when this thing was unfolding.
Yeah.
Right. I didn't know that was who ordered the hit.
The same individual who has an 850 million fraud, what? Was in this 850 million fraud whistleblower, that lady from Tembisa
Hospital,
Babita Dekoran, exposed and was later gunned outside of her home.
Yes.
The same individual was later awarded a tender of 360 million rand by SAPS. Thank goodness, I think Kiafani Masomela said, not on my watch. He's now he's now being alleged by Lieutenant Mkwanazi to have ties to Police Minister
Senzo Mkunu
and his deputy Shadrack Sibiya and his and someone called Brown Mohotsi. I think he mentioned that.
Brown is the guy who WhatsApped him.
Yes.
And said, "Hey, General, how are you? What? Like they were proud."
Sure. Then this lady goes on to say, further to say, "Who the heck is this Brown Mohotsi? He's a member and I think she said he's an ANC member, but apparently he's not."
Okay, yeah. I also saw a tweet saying he was, but.
Yeah, and a businessman with no official position in government. Oh, yeah, sorry, yes. With no official business position in government, but moves with bravado of a government official. Also very privy to official intel.
Yeah.
This is evident by an interview from General Mkhonazi on EWN, right?
Which yes, that's the interview that came out. Yeah, I saw it this morning.
In this interview, Mkhonazi reveals that Brown is is from the Northwest and is well associated with the minister, right? He then tries to form beef. What? Tries to form beef, Nyana, with the police higher ups by sending Mkhonazi texts that you mentioned and various documents supporting his claims. Mkhonazi revealed that Brown and Kunu's careers are funded by the security bureau.
Kat.
Yes. There was even WhatsApp texts and POPs. Kat alleged also co-owns a gang. Hey, damn, I feel bad even just reading half of this stuff.
Bro, are you sure you want to go deeper?
this gang, he's part of a gang in Mamelodi who is infamous for extorting people, residents of Ikaheng, claiming that they can divert water to this informal settlement, blah, blah, blah. Hey, she goes on and on and on, but basically there's ties of, things that were mentioned of popular artists, killings. Yes.
There was a particular assassination mentioned of DJ somebody, I think is who he was referring to.
Sure.
In that, and bro, I won't even lie.
Sure.
I didn't even think of that angle. Now, allegedly.
No, but there's a picture of the guy Sambi was with, was wearing the guy.
Yeah, he was wearing, But he was the guy, he was the bodyguard.
Yes, he was wearing the bodyguard.
Cat VIP protection shirt. Yeah.
Yeah.
The guy that was bodyguarding somebody. He also died.
Spoo.
Yeah. For me, I also feel like this whole thing starts at like, it's weird because it's like a repeat of what's happened under previous administrations with previous heads of the security cluster.
Sure.
Remember when the Scorpions was disbanded, something similar was happening. But years after, we found out that, at the time that the Scorpions were disbanded, there was a whole web of Mbeki trying to protect Celebi, trying to investigate Zuma. And it's like, in the game of politics, you expect Mkhonazi to just come in, play his role, and shut up, right? Now here's a guy that's like, nah, if I have this power invested in me, I need to do something about it.
Sure.
And we are shocked as a nation that a man is actually standing up and saying, I want to do something about alleged crimes that are happening.
At this magnitude.
Exactly. When you tie the dots like that lady in her tweet where it's like, okay, a SARS investigator was investigating and then got shot, conveniently or coincidentally at the same time that this was happening.
Sure.
You know, there's a thing that just goes now beyond where, obviously, all of it must be proven in a court of law. All of it must be proven beyond reasonable doubt, blah, blah, blah. Mm. But if we just sit as people with common sense,
sure,
it's naive to say, my brah, we believe everyone in this thing is just innocent.
Yeah.
And this is just slander and smear campaign.
Who, there was even that deputy, I think it was a deputy minister, it was just like, I was operating under instruction.
But that's the thing. Can you say that as a defense?
Mm.
Because where Mkwanazi, something he mentioned yesterday.
No, but that's also very telling to say, hey, I was just operating.
Yeah. He alleges that Mkunu and General Spia deliberately disbanded a crucial unit which was investigating political murders in KZN. Mm. He claims they blocked investigations into organized crimes linked to the political assassinations under pressure from drug cartels and influential business interests. Mm. His actions are framed in a fight to preserve integrity and law enforcement as well as uphold justice.
Sure. Now,
if you watch, there's a documentary called 204. Getting Away with Murder. It's about the murder of Brett Kibble.
Yes.
It's a very concise and an interesting watch. Go and check it. It's on Amazon Prime. That documentary essentially covers in the time of Brett Kibble when he was trying to merge massive, we're talking now billions of rands at stake. He obviously had political connections, he had police connections, and he had underworld connections with police connections.
Sure.
And what he was trying to do is he was trying to tie this little web together where the transaction would go through and everybody would make a lot of money.
Sure.
And a lot of stuff had to be suppressed and covered up in order for this thing to take place. But when you watch that and you listen to Jackie Celebi's statements on it and the commentators in that documentary, this whole web that's going on now actually starts to make sense. That's why I say it's almost like it's not the first time
to repeat,
that it's happened. And I saw an interesting...
There was even mention of the multiple cases that need to be signed off or that need to... The warrants of arrest.
Yes.
For all the people that are allegedly involved in these things, where it's just like it's sitting on the minister's...
And no one's prepared to sign it. The minister's not prepared to sign it. In his chat about the disbanding of that unit, right?
Sure.
He mentions, in that press conference, he mentions the WhatsApp chat was literally like, yo, PH, don't worry, that unit has been disbanded.
Yeah.
No one, those people that were harassing you. And, okay, cool, he's speaking colloquially, but... Were people comfortable enough to just share WhatsApps like that?
Mm.
Bro, even if I chat to Hans, I delete the WhatsApp. Can tell you now, if I was planning on overthrowing the country, my brother, I'm not going to do it on my number from WhatsApp. I'm going to do it on a burner phone. But anyway, there's a guy I follow on Twitter. His name is Sizwe Sikamusi. Love his tweets. He always puts together these very well thought out things. He said, let's briefly contextualize General Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi's actions yesterday. He said, first, let's get something out the way. The primary role of SAPS is not to fight crime. It's to protect the country's elites. There's a reason why, since Jackie Celebi, every single SAPS national commissioner has left the office in disgrace, whether due to corruption charges, suspensions, or public scandals. He says, this is no coincidence. It's because the commissioner is not appointed to lead a crime-fighting institution, but instead to serve as a shield. They are there to absorb public outrage, suppress investigations, and protect powerful interests in both the public and private sector. Successive presidents, from Mbeki to Zuma to Ramaphosa, have all used the SAPS for political ends just in different ways. When Thabo Mbeki governed, he governed through technocratic ministries, especially justice and intelligence. Mm. His presidency relied on legal and procedural instruments to enforce political discipline. Justice ministers like Penwell Maduna and Bridget Mabandla were key players in shaping the NPA, which Mbeki used to pursue, contain, or remove opponents, most famously Jacob Zuma.
Sure.
The SAPS under Mbeki were subordinated to his legalist strategy. Police Commissioner Jackie Celebi, while politically connected, operated within a tightly controlled framework. When it was politically convenient, Mbeki discarded him with ease because those corruption charges 100%. Came and that was the end of him. Mbeki ruled through technocratic legal gatekeeping, not brute police force. Zuma took the opposite route. He had been targeted by the justice system before under Mbeki, so his first priority was to neutralize it.
Get rid of it.
Mm. Yeah. He oversaw the disbanding of the Scorpions, repurposed the SAPS, the State Security Agency, and crime intelligence under Richard Mduli. As instruments of state control. His appointments to National Police Commissioner role were chosen solely for loyalty. Throughout his presidency, Zuma governed defensively. When Mbeki used the law as a weapon, Zuma used the police as armor. As far as the National Police Commissioner was concerned, it was not difficult for Zuma to do the commission to do, since the commissioner is appointed by the president. In other words, he's going to choose somebody that's loyal to him. Mkhwanazi is speaking about cats at that level. Imagine a scenario, hypothetically speaking, where that commissioner is loyal to the one who chose him. Who chose him? Ramaphosa. It puts you in a, you understand, like when you start checking how the chess pieces move around the board, you'll understand why it is politically beneficial to have someone there that you control as an individual or as a party. But here comes a guy that's like, nah.
Hey, fuck all of that.
Fuck all of that. You check. And he can't be bought. You know what I mean?
You know what, ne? Let's get rid of the rot, man. Like, it would be nice to have a and I'm not saying corruption-free. It sounds like a dream, and I can't believe that's even coming out of my mouth. But to know that at that level, even at that level, at the highest level of what is supposed to be perceived as protecting us as the citizens, it's rotten.
Yeah, no, it's bad, dude.
Then what? It speaks volumes for the rest of the system. Then we will always have crime issues in this country.
Yeah, but the thing is, what when you say, like, let's get rid of the rot, we can't throw the whole thing out. I think what's going to be very interesting, I won't lie, I don't have any faith in the president who happens to be in Brazil. He's attending that BRICS summit.
That was great timing by...
lucky he wasn't here for that shit. But apparently when he comes back, he's going to address the matter. But my thing is, taking from that excerpt, it's his commissioner. Do you understand what I'm saying? I think the country should brace itself to not be surprised if no action is taken. Because it'll almost be political suicide if Ramaphosa gets rid of his own allies. So imagine I'm keeping you in a position for all the stuff you do for me.
Sure.
The fact that you're doing that other stuff there outside with Ketsi, yes, it's a fuck up, but I've got to find a way to keep you because I need you for all of my stuff. Maybe I didn't even know about this other shit that you're doing.
Now that you've raised it.
You understand? Yeah. I've got to try and say, hey, how do I keep this bra? Because this bra is my bra. It's got my info. It's got my stuff. Am I making sense?
Dollars in the couch.
Politics? Yeah. This is the same guy who had dollars in the couch. We actually still don't know where they were from. His bank statements were concealed, so we don't know where the hell he got his money from to win the presidency. His shares and interests in various businesses across multiple industries and sectors seem to... Best businessman to ever live. You know, this guy's just brilliant. He's a brilliant person. So I don't have the utmost faith in this individual. I think Penwell actually said it. He was like, I don't expect the guy who did X, Y, and Z to be the guy who's going to come swoop in and get rid of this bra. But as I say, I also don't necessarily blame him in that if that guy is his political appointee, by getting rid of him, he exposes himself up to so much more. And to quote from the DA, they always have this thing that they say that what's happening now with the GNU is better than the alternative. It's almost like we could literally be told in a press conference next week, hey guys, in jail end up.
Sure.
But it's better than the alternative. I can't get rid of this guy. Okay?
Yeah.
Because trust me, bro.
If we do, it's on you.
Yeah. It's like that Paul O'Sullivan guy. Did you see that white timer?
Captured that one.
He literally came with the trust me, bro. Yeah. He's like, Why doesn't Mkhwanazi,
trust me.
He's like, why doesn't Mkhwanazi tell us about the Louis Vuitton bag? I'm like, what the fuck? Who cares what bag you're scary? Bro, I don't even care if Mkhwanazi took a bribe 20 years ago.
It's fine.
It's fine.
Yeah.
We're dealing with this matter now.
Yeah.
Then he's like, he was wearing the wrong uniform. He must be charged.
He was wearing the right uniform. Screw that guy.
And it shows you the type of power people like the Paul O'Sullivans of the world have. Sure. In that this guy did the press conference at 3 p.m. That man was on the news at 7.
Sure.
Me, he's not the first guy I would think to call
100%.
When the general goes on
but also
TV.
You're there to distract, like you're going against.
Exactly. But why him is my thing. Like how much, who did he call Newsroom or did Newsroom call him? Because if Newsroom called him, surely they've got everybody else's numbers. You know what I mean? I'd rather hear from a deputy commissioner.
Or someone who's accused.
My man. Or a DG. Or somebody inside that structure of government.
Sure.
Why am I hearing from a private investigator?
Kuningi and SE1, but please protect wherever, if we're, please protect Mkhwanazi wherever you are. If you see him, protect that man.
Yeah,
country duty is to protect that man.
And I see people are saying if they touch Mkhwanazi, there's going to be riots again.
Bro, I saw.
Me, I'm in those fucking riots.
I saw online videos.
Diamond Walk, I'm looting that shit.
Oh, wow. I saw video.
I'm not going to loot checkers, bro. Like, yeah. I'm going to loot Diamond Walk. What the fuck?
I saw videos from the Eastern Cape and from the Western Cape where they were like, hey, and they were already marching. Yeah. They're like, hey, bro, don't touch that guy. And if you do, Ziyakhala.
Yeah.
Which actually gives me confidence, man, that the people feel seen and there's someone who's actually working for them, you know, which is a good thing. Because we always come across, you know, negative news when it comes to government or politics or anything that has to do with corruption, you know. Mm. So to have something positive of this nature is pretty dope.
Shout out Mkhwanazi. I knew he was the one.
Yeah.
So I hope he follows through. I hope nothing happens to him. And I hope the allegations are taken seriously. Also, shout out to Ian Cameron, man. His comments on the matter have also been... That guy's been fighting the fight. So, yeah, now he knows all the intricacies.
Sure.
Where it's like when he gives his statement, you can tell this guy's coming from an informed position. Behind the scenes, when it wasn't in the media, he was fighting. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Mm. And there's many things that are swept under the rug that guy is pursuing tirelessly. You know that video of Paul Mashatile's bodyguards kicking the shit out of those dudes?
Yeah.
They were all basically let off with a slap on the wrist. And he's like, no.
Kanjan.
How? This private security thing where in the private security industry you can have guns. All of them on your company name need to be in a safe.
Sure.
And they all need to serve a purpose. I can't just take a firearm out of the safe. It needs to be assigned to a particular bodyguard, security operator, and a site.
Sure. I saw a video which made me, I think, extremely worried just about the protection of the citizens in this country, where I don't think, firstly, we don't have enough police
for the
force.
Number of people. Yeah,
for the number of people, but the number of private security companies, I think there's 6 private securities to every 1 police officer.
Yeah, yeah.
That's private security companies. So it's like, it's better off to own a security company than to be a policeman.
Well, it depends on the security, because remember, it might just be a guard, the one who opens the boom gate.
No, they were saying that.
But it might also be
armed.
Yes.
They were saying there's 6 security, that kind of security were armed to every 1 police officer, which makes me like.
It's like the privatization of policing.
Mm.
You know, like people just want to be safe.
Mm.
And I don't think, you know, like in a moment where you require saving.
Sure.
You don't care who's saving you.
Sure.
You're trying to get saved. You need someone with the gun to come in and shoot people.
So it's better to call Fidelity than it is to call the police.
Most people living in affluent areas or any middle class and up, they all rely on private security.
Sure.
Most people in their home rely on the ADT or the CAP or CAM, whoever is the security in your area.
Sure.
And then at the higher network individual level of the game, people rely on their bodyguards.
Gotcha.
You know, people are not out here in affluent areas talking about, let me call 10111. No way. They call their guy who does the security in the sector.
Got you.
So it's like the privatization of protection. Whereas poor people have to rely on the police, and there's not enough of them to service everyone.
Got you.
If that organization, being SAPS, is then further corrupted by the fact that there are individuals within the SAP structure that are on the take from drug cartels. Mm. Well, that's a fuck up. You know, you're never going to fix the Cape Flats then.
Gotcha.
How? If the allegations are true that the top level are involved with these people, why would they even service the bottom level? You need the product to move.
Ish.
And South Africa is perfectly located in terms of the map of the world. Bro, this is
to move things around, yeah.
You know the Greyhound from Joburg to Durban?
Mm-hmm.
It stops in Montrose.
Sure.
And you buy chow and you snack. And this is the
Montrose of the world.
Kulagliwakon. You swap buses depending on where you're going, bro. So the shit comes in here, it swaps buses, it goes somewhere else, you know, and vice versa.
It's an interesting week. that the next couple of weeks, not even say a week, that we're going to see things unfolding. Hopefully we see them unfolding. Yeah.
Let's go to the gun shop. We need to get you armed.
Allegedly.
I never close. He always closes.
Oh,
wow.
You guys have made a serious impression on PH.
You always open.
He's lost words.
You always open.
It's been an amazing show. Thank you very much for always showing us love on the socials. Like, subscribe, comment. Comment, please. The couples there that are having a sexual life, please comment. Let's engage. And we want to see what you guys think about the episode. And let's talk more about sex. Otherwise, see you on the other side.
And we're running a poll on whether or not we should start a swingers club.
Yes.
Prof will help
shady,
us.
The shady swingers. There we go. The shady swingers club.
Take it easy. If it's easy, take it home.
Yeah, definitely with the swingers. That's happening.